the buzzer. McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
T-Square. Yeah. It's been a kind of a rough week for world of college basketball. If you think about it, the last 7 days, Lou Dolson, head coach at Arizona, he passes. And then John Thompson yesterday morning passes. I mean, two Hall of Fame coaches, two guys that were bigger than basketball, two guys that were able to build programs at places that Arizona, like when Lou went to Arizona, I think they were 4-24 the year before, and he won seven straight Pac-12 championships, or at that point Pac-10. And what John Thompson did was so much bigger than basketball, whether it was the first African-American to win a championship, whether it was the ability to stand up for what's right, to challenge Prop 48, to not be afraid of consequence, I would say. And I got to know Coach really well because we used to scrimmage JT3's team every year when I was at Virginia Tech, and my brother drafted Allen Iverson, so we became close to the Thompson family. And two really tremendous losses to the game of basketball and society. What is your take?
Well, Lou Dolson did a great job at Iowa, and he did a fantastic job, obviously, at Arizona. I had a great night with Lou Dolson in 08 at the Final Four. Just kind of, I don't know why, he just kind of gravitated to me one evening. And I'd played golf with him once on a Nike trip, but I just really liked him. And somebody described him perfectly. They're like, a lot of coaches got to yell and scream, Seth. Lou Dolson can get his point across and then some without yelling and screaming. He can make you feel like you want to run through a wall without yelling and screaming. I just always admired him. I always admired his teams. I always admired the way he went about his business. Now, John Thompson, to me, Seth, totally different level. John Thompson, to me, and I love people that stand up for something. And there's two sides, and there's two things that I always remember. I never coached against him. I swear to God, Seth, and I think I told Patrick Ewing on this podcast, they were the biggest, baddest dudes in the 80s. Like,
yeah,
I remember asking Coach Knight going into my senior year if we could play them. My junior year, we lost to you guys, or I think you played, it was going to be Feistlam.
We played Houston. They beat Houston.
Yeah, and then it was going to be, if you won, you're going to play Georgetown. I always wanted to punch Michael Graham and see what happened. because they would, Thompson's teams, man, starting with like Eric Smith or Gene Smith, they get in a stance and they guard you, and then they dunk on you and run down the court and push whoever was out of the way. I always wanted to score a layup and then shove either Ewing or Michael Gray just to see what the hell happened.
Might have been the only time you shoved them, though.
It would be. I was clearly ready to take a beating, or at least an embarrassment, on national TV. I just want one time, see what happens. But he stood up, man. John Thompson was. And then the other thing, not only were his teams tough and, he walked out on Prop 48, but guys back then had humor, man. Like, he wore Louis' sweater, and it was so great, so funny. And I say this all the time, and I want your reaction to this, Seth. I'm going to Thompson, Knight, Dean Smith. People don't know the stuff that Coach Knight did for African-Americans, particularly on the campus here with starting an African-American library and a ton of other things. Those guys stood up, man. I'm like, all right, modern day coaches, when you pass, and I'm not talking about the older guys, I'm talking, what are you going to be known for? That you made great relationships with shoe companies? He was unbelievable with agents. You got to stand up, man, when things are wrong and you see. And I truthfully, I've been disappointed in college basketball coaches during this time. And maybe it's not their place. Some have said things, but I guarantee you Thompson and Smith and Knight would have done something tangible.
John Chaney
would have done something tangible during this time. But
I think Cal and his group are doing something.
Yeah. Tangible.
with the McClendon project, and that's going to give opportunities. But you're right. Like here, I coached the Big East at that time, and as an assistant, to me, the thing that made the Big East so interesting, we'll get to this with Coach Boeheim in a little while, is that guys competed like hell. They recruited against each other like hell. Teams played freaking hard. The games were physical, right? Then they'd go to league meetings at the end of the year. They'd argue like hell and then laugh like hell because it was just different. Think about Massimino and Boeheim and Calhoun and John Thompson. And, you know, think about the cast of Rick Pitino when he was at Providence. But there was a tremendous respect for each other. And that's a little bit missing. You know, my greatest thing, Coach Thompson, we used to scrimmage Georgetown, and Coach Thompson and Red Auerbach would come and watch the scrimmage. So we'd come in, and there would be Coach Thompson and Red Auerbach sitting at half court watching us scrimmage Georgetown. So at the end of every scrimmage, 1 year it was in Blacksburg, 1 year it was in D.C., I'd introduce Coach Auerbach, and he'd say something nice, and then I'd introduce Coach Thompson. And that was unbelievable. He would write down. I said, "Coach, the floor is yours," and he went right down and went right through our guys. And I still remember what he turned to one kid. I'm not going to mention his name to embarrass him, but he said, "You know what? You think you're a pussycat? You need to be a blanking bull. Enough of that." I mean, he just went after him, and I'm standing behind him. I'm just dying, but his messaging to our team was so good and so real. And, you know, I was fortunate. He would let me and Brad come in practice, which was a rarity for them. And he treated us so well. And then when JT3 came, obviously, to work at ESPN, who's such a great guy. And then Coach Olson, when I got the job at Long Beach State, I went to Slam and Jam, which was in Compton, Dominguez Hills, Compton High School. And you'd walk in and the first guy there, the last guy to leave every time. Tan pants. Starched white shirt, like it had to be chafing his neck. Blue blazer every time, every weekend. All right, hair perfectly coiffured, and he would be there every second. But the thing that made Lute different to me, besides he was innovative, think about how fast they played, think about the changing defenses, think about the things they did. But I did an event for the Special Olympics when I became head coach at Long Beach. And I called him up. I was actually going to ask him for an auction item. And I said, "Coach, you know, you're loved here in Long Beach. People think the world of you." He was the coach at Long Beach City and Long Beach State. And I was about to say, "Can you give me an auction item?" He goes, "When's your event?" And I gave him the date. And he goes, "I'll be there." And not only was he there, he came every year I did it. He was the first guy there with me when I was setting up. And he sat with me after we were done every single time, It was incredible. Like to me, that was almost, and he would sit like kind of the situation where he would sit and he was a worldly guy. Like he talked world issues, news, history. I mean, which I was way over my head. I got to be honest. I did a lot of head bobbing back then. but two terrific, terrific coaches. And let me ask you this. Are we seeing a changing, what's the right word? I wouldn't say a changing of the guard, but I mean, you think about that generation of coaches, Lou Hudson, Lute Olson, Coach Thompson, we lost Coach Smith. I mean, think about Roy Williams, Coach Boeheim. I mean, we're looking at a generation of coaches that coached in a completely different era. And Lefty Driesell, who's still alive, Lou Cardasek, who's still alive. We lost Coach Massimino last year. We're going to be a generation of this next generation players that literally will not even know these guys. Crazy, right?
Circle of life, man. You know what I mean? It's a circle of life. It's, you know, you talk about five-star. A lot of people don't know what five-star is. You know, I mean, that's the way it is. One thing I would say, this is what I got a bit of a soapbox here, okay? Just a little one, a minor soapbox.
And not major, because, I mean,
It's minor. Really funny. Like, I've seen all these little namby-pamby media folks talking about how great Coach Thompson was because how gruff and tough, and demanding he was. Those are the same people that when somebody now yells at a kid on the sidelines, they go nuts. Oh, you can't. Yeah. You know, I've always said, Seth, and you live it, I live it. Being tough on your players like Thompson was, like Lute Olson was, makes them love you later.
Oh, and 100%.
Being a fraud just to get wins doesn't really get that. It doesn't. And the guys that you mentioned, basically all of them, including Coach Massimino and Coach Olson and Tom, they were like that. They in their own way, some screamed, some yelled, some didn't. It was okay, but they were all tough guys that held players accountable. And, man, if I could ever say anything to a young coach, don't be afraid to coach your guys, man.
100%.
Don't be afraid to correct them. Don't be afraid to get on their ass, but do it in the way that's you, and they'll appreciate it. Particularly, they'll appreciate it later on. I mean, and so will mommies and daddies. But those guys were the epitome. All right, I got to ask you something before we get to David Wingate and Jim Boeheim, okay?
Yeah.
Are you reading anything into the NCAA trademarking the term battle in the bubble or battle for the bubble, whatever it is? Are you reading anything into that?
100%. Yeah, I mean, we're going to play in a bubble this season. That's just the way it is. Unless this vaccine comes through and who knows how many people are going to take it for the well-being of all involved. Without a doubt, we're going to see pods. We're going to see bubbles. We're going to see the tournament in a bubble. We might be in a one-sider. We might be in different sites. But that's the reality. Look, the TBT, the NBA, the WNBA have proven that you can do it. We're seeing Northwestern just decided they're going to take their classes all online. No kids are going to be able to be on campus. We're going to see it throughout the country, potentially. So like all that thing about you can't have, you know, distance education and not, class not in session on campus and play college basketball. That's not true. You can. It's just, you know, look, we're in unique times. We're in uncharted waters. This is unprecedented. And when you're in these type of things, you've got to make hard decisions. You make tough decisions and you adjust. You know, to me, I think a big part of life is not what happens. It's agility. The most successful people have agility to adjust to difficult situations. This is the most unique situation that our country's ever been in and athletics has ever been in. And you know what? We will adjust. And you know what? As we're watching the NBA, like those games last night were unbelievable. If you're watching Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell go head to head, I don't care if those are pseudo fans. I don't care if they're virtual fans. I don't care. Let me tell you something. I'm sitting at the edge of my chair. I'm watching those games. It's unbelievable. Now, the defense, in excluding the Miami Heat and Milwaukee a little bit, the defense right now in the NBA is not being played at a high level. But offensively, and the games, in terms of just fun, watching good basketball, man, this thing's been a blast.
I agree. August Madness, man, started at 1 o'clock and would end at 10 o'clock in the first round, and at midnight. I'm totally with you, man. I am so with
you. Do you feel like the games are any different? Or any, like guys are getting chippy, guys are going after each other, guys are competing. It just proves you can do all those things because the really good players don't care who's watching. The really good players – obviously, you feed off the crowd. Maybe it impacts a home team. But the really good players, they're playing a damn win. Whether it's a pickup game, whether it's a game of golf, whether it's a sprint, whether it's three-on-three shooting drill, competitive people play to win. That's what we're seeing in the bubble right now.
Totally agree.
We'd like to welcome in Jim Boeheim to the podcast, the world's greatest podcast coach. When I say John Thompson, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Larger-than-life figure, maybe the most important coach in basketball history, in college basketball history, and one of the better coaches in college basketball history.
Hey, Coach, you guys, you know, I'd make the argument. I'm sitting there in the early 80s as a player in Bloomington, Indiana. I only know the guys I played against at five-star. I don't know who the hell – truthfully, Pearl Washington is or whatever, but I knew when you guys were battling them that my fat ass or my skinny ass then was sitting in front of a TV watching Big Monday. Did you and Coach Thompson ever discuss the impact that both your programs had on the entire land of college basketball?
I don't think we ever did. I think we probably understood it. You know, Dave Gavitt created a league at the right time, the right moment in history when everything converged. The coaches were in place. Patrick Ewing went to Georgetown. Chris Mullin went to St. John's. Pearl came to Syracuse. A bunch of other good players came to other teams in the league. And ESPN got going, got rolling. And you were not the only kid. Kids across the country, kids in California, they got home to watch Big Monday. And, you know, I don't think we were aware of it at the time. I think we realized it much later. But it was a moment in college basketball history when a league came from nowhere to being the best league in the country. And that's never happened, never will happen again. And John Thompson was a big part of it. He was a mentor and a role model for all coaches and all players, not just African-American coaches and African-American players. Everybody, you know, the guy sitting home like Dan Dockett just watching this. Everybody's watching this. And it was a huge impact on college basketball. It's part of why the tournament and college basketball has grown to such levels. It was through that Big East conference. And of course, every other conference now steps up their game to try to keep up or get better. And all the teams in the Big East tried to step up their game to get better or as good as Georgetown. And as a result, you had massive growth in college basketball at all levels. I mean, all different schools, the Gonzagas, you can go down the list of schools that grew into basketball schools because they wanted to be like Georgetown. They wanted to be like the Big East. And John had a huge part of that. And he was a dynamic figure, and he pushed reform, and he pushed kids to be better, to get their education, to not just be basketball players. And I don't think he's probably appreciated enough by everybody. I think when you saw Shaq and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith talk about it last night, the reverence in their voices for who John Thompson was, it just struck me as, you know, here's three iconic figures of our game on TV, probably the best, you know, most watched show on TV with these characters. And, you know, John Thompson is getting his due for who he was. And I'm not sure everyone appreciates him as much as they should.
That's great. Coach, can you explain to people, like back then in the Big East, if you think about it, it was yourself and Coach Corteseca and Coach Thompson and Coach Massimino and Coach Calhoun. Guys fought like dogs. I mean, the games were so stinking competitive. But respect was as high as the competitiveness of the games. Wouldn't you say so?
Well, I've never seen anything like it. And the ACC is a great league now. I've seen other great leagues. But there truly was nothing like that. Like you mentioned some of the coaches you left out, Gary Williams, Hall of Fame, Rick Pitino, Hall of Fame, Tom Davis, unbelievable coach. All these coaches aspired and got to be great because of John Thompson pushing the limit and Dave Gavitt giving them the foundation to do it. And I'll give you, everybody talks hyperboles and how their league is so good. And I'll tell you, two of the top officials in the country, I think they both worked over 20 Final Fours, Jim Burr and Tim Higgins. I mean, these guys worked final games. Probably 20, said to me, there is nothing like the intensity of a Big East conference game when the year when the league peaked during the 80s and 90s. And they worked all leagues. They worked Big Ten. They worked ACC. And when those guys said that, I said, you know, that's it. You don't need an announcer on TV to say it. You don't need a pundit, a newspaper writer, or a writer in Sports Illustrated to say it. When these guys say it, that's what the truth is.
Coach, I believe differently. I believe it's not official, and Seth and I say it, but I get what you're saying. Hey, Coach.
That's the problem. You guys believe that.
Hey, Coach Thompson, one of the most, he wasn't even coaching, but I was sitting in front of you and Coach Calhoun at the big coaches convention in Chicago where guys were,
right.
Everybody had to go and
gets up
there and gives a speech about God and all that. And remember when Thompson got up there afterwards and exploded?
John Thompson, when he spoke, everybody listened.
Yep.
And he continued to do that during his entire retirement. He certainly was a much softer guy than you realized. I certainly came to find that out. No relationship changed more than 360 degrees than ours. I mean, we battled as fiercely as you can possibly battle, and then we became good friends. And he led a lot of coaches to the game of basketball, mentored a lot of coaches, and not black, all coaches. I mean, P.J. Carlesimo went to him. He helped P.J. get through his struggles at Seton Hall. And he helped a lot of coaches, a ton of coaches. And he was an example for everybody. Again, I don't think you can overrate the influence of John Thompson. And there will be great coaches. There will be many great coaches. But there will never be another John Thompson.
Coach, do you have one Georgetown moment in your mind that, like, all of a sudden, you know, one game just resonates? Yeah, I mean, you guys,
you know,
had
there was,
so
it was
many
hard. There were so many games, but I'll never forget when we were playing in the Dome in the Big East tournament. We needed to win against Georgetown to even have a chance to get to the tournament. We had to win the tournament, which we did, and we still didn't go, but we were playing Georgetown. We were up. We'd come from behind. We kind of got control of the game. Not much time left, but still enough time. And John had, I don't think he even had timeouts left. He used them or something. He stormed down to me to try to get the referees to stop the game. I want, you know, we're trying to keep playing. And he's face to face with me. And, you know, here's 7 foot, 350 pounds looking down at 6'4", 180. And I'm like looking up, and I said, John, you know, let's go. Let's play this game. He goes, well, you know, I had to try something. And he just pushed me, and I felt like I drew a charge or something. And it was a great moment. We laughed and went back, and fortunately we won the game. But, you know, he was a big figure, bigger than life, and he intimidated a lot of people. But he also made a lot of people better coaches, because they had to play up to the level that Georgetown brought to the table.
Hey, Coach, you said yesterday that what he did at Georgetown, nobody saw coming. Can you explain to folks what Georgetown was as a basketball program before John Thompson? And from a coach, what was the hardest thing to play against with him?
Well, here's pressure. Here's 40 minutes. They're going to come at you for 40 minutes. They're going to give you everything they got. They're going to be physical. And they're going to just try to take your heart. That's what they're going to do. If you can't be physical and fight them, they're going to beat you. They're going to dominate you. But Georgetown, before John Thompson got there, was probably one of the worst basketball schools in the country, worse than the Ivy Leagues, worse than anybody. I mean, they won a couple games, and they were terrible. I mean, they just couldn't play basketball. And when he took over, you know, it was he had an unbelievable job ahead of him. And, you know, he was fortunate. He got a couple of kids from Washington to come there that really helped turn this thing around right away. John Dern, Craig Shelton. And then he started recruiting nationally. And, you know, Patrick obviously went there, and that turned the thing completely around when Patrick went there. They became one of the top programs in the country. and helped the Big East become the top league in the country. But it was a monumental turnaround. You know, it's Kentucky, Kansas, some programs around the country, UCLA, North Carolina. The next coach there will do well because they're great basketball programs. It's much was much bigger job, much more difficult to do it at Georgetown.
Where do you think, like, you know, with everything that's gone on, we've lost Coach Mass, we lost Coach Olson, obviously Coach Thompson. The next generation coach, do you think they understand exactly what, you know, we're talking about transition, where the way it was and the way it is now are light years away from each other in terms of college basketball? How do we keep the history of our game? And like those who made it what it is today, stay in the forefront.
Well, the coaches today are great. Let me say that. I don't want to be the old guy in the, you know, saying how great it was. The coaches today are great basketball coaches. All these young guys coming out there, you can name 15, 20 and not name all the great young coaches. They're just different. It's different. It's a modern world. Those guys were old school. Lou Conosecca, Rolly Massimino, you know, John Thompson. I mean, go through the list of coaches. It was just a different time. Money wasn't important. You didn't coach. It wasn't about the money. It wasn't about the TV, the exposure. You know, the NCAA tournament was wasn't even that big a thought in the 60s and 70s. And obviously that changed in the 80s and on into the 90s. But it was just different people. College basketball is great today, and the coaches are great, and the players are great. It's just a different time. And I think the coaches today should be aware of those coaches and what they did. Just like I was aware of Coach Wooden and Adolph Rupp and Hank Iba and Don Haskins and John McClendon and all those coaches. So it's a different generation, but you should always be aware of the history of your game and the players and coaches who came before. I argue with my sons all the time. I said, you don't know how good Pete Maravich was. Oh, you know, he couldn't play today.
Oh, geez.
You know, Pete Maravich probably couldn't get 44 today. He'd probably get 41 a game. Yeah, that's all. But, they don't understand some of the history.
Probably get 52 because there was no 3-point line when Maravich.
Yeah, probably. I have to say you're right for a change. Gee whiz.
That's hard to admit.
Hard to admit.
You were right.
All right, Coach, basketball in a bubble. What are your thoughts?
I thought it was great. I mean, the NBA figured out we can't give in to the virus. We have to fight it. Adam Silver figured that out. They spent a lot of money. And they've made a great product. They have a great game. And they've showed if you isolate, like we are on college campuses today, we're isolating players. We're trying to keep them safe. The testing rate is so much lower for college athletes than it is for the public, for students. It's so much lower because we're able to control them. And they're being responsible. They want to play football. They want to play basketball. They want to run track. They want to play field hockey. So that isn't better than sending them home where they can infect everybody. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And the NBA led the way. Baseball's doing a pretty good job. They've had a couple outbreaks, but they're doing a pretty good job. I mean, the greatest golf tournament, one of the greatest ones I've ever seen was this last weekend when Dustin Johnson makes an impossible putt to tie and John Rahm makes a more impossible putt to win. So let's try to get back to school. Let's try to get back to sports. And there's going to be glitches. There's going to be some ups and downs. But we can't wait around for this virus to go away. It's not going away. And I think it's from all the doctors I talked to, there's not going to be a cure right away either.
Have you watched every single NBA playoff game?
I missed one. I was watching the Yankees for a little while, so I missed part of a game. But other than that, yeah, I'm watching them all. And watch some Korean baseball this year. Yeah, you know, you got to watch what's on TV.
Coach, because you watch every basketball game, the WNBA is in your sights. Everything's in your sights. But what are you doing with your players? Like, I played golf with Tirico, and he said an interesting thing that they told Syracuse students. They said, look, if you want to go back to your mom and dad's basement, then don't do the guidelines we're giving you. And I thought that was pretty good. What are your players doing on campus? How are you helping them?
We've been working out. They're isolated in their apartments. They have one floor in an apartment building, so they're pretty isolated. I mean, they're still kids, but we're talking to them all the time. All of our players who never even did it before are playing golf after practice. They're playing golf on weekends, which some of them have never played golf. And they're trying to social distance. They're wearing their masks. They're wearing them every day. They're wearing them out of the building. They're wearing them in the building. The only time they're not wearing masks is when they're playing. We're testing them once a week. We will be going to more rapid testing. They're working out. They've been working out for 7 weeks. I guess it is now, 3-4 days a week. And they're really doing well. They're really doing well. They're getting better. They're getting stronger. And they're enjoying playing basketball and trying to get ready for the season. I think we're going to have a season whenever it starts and finishes. I don't know, but I believe we'll have a season. And I believe we'll play games. And our chancellor has done an unbelievable job. He's tested every student. He's isolated. He's quarantined students. He's suspended some students already who didn't social distance. And so far, we've had good results. I mean, there's going to be problems. Kids are going to get positive tests, you know. But I think in all the experience I've seen with all the football players, all the other athletes, they're bouncing back. They're at practice. So we just got to work our way through this. And we have the resources. We're obviously able to spend money, and some smaller schools can't test this much. And it's probably why they didn't try to play. But you have to test, and I'm hoping rapid testing is coming. That's something they think is coming pretty soon. And we can test every day and be safe throughout this time, because we're going to be in this time for a while.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you. Stay healthy. Now, I got a question. Now, Jimmy, they're not even doing anything at Cornell, right?
No, they can't get into a gym at Cornell. They're not allowed into a gym. So he's taking his classes remote. He's still right home right now working out here. We have a court he can work out on in a weight room, but he can't work out at Cornell. And they're probably not going to play more than a few conference games, if that. So I think the Ivy League players are all going to have to make a decision whether they'll play at all or just sit the year and try to play someplace else next year, unless the Ivy League is willing to grant kids an extra year of eligibility, which they've never done. And I don't know why, but hopefully they'll come to some reasonable decision that these kids deserve to play a fifth year because of this pandemic.
I have a stepdaughter sitting out the year, plays softball at Harvard. So she's not going back until they decide for that exact reason, because she doesn't want to lose the year about going to school.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's silly. These kids, I think the Ivy League doesn't realize, I mean, they act like sports doesn't matter to their students. So I think they misread that. I think the athletes in the Ivy League work just as hard as our guys do and love it just as much and want to be able to play. And if they're not allowed to play, they at least want the extra year of eligibility. So I don't know. It's a puzzle to me sometimes how really smart people cannot understand some things.
Last thing, my wife, who you enhanced our love life, and I won't get into that. She loves you, and she just liked hearing.
She's the only one in your family that I really like, you know. I just don't mean
to. That was too easy.
And you got so lucky. It's really a miracle. That's all I can say.
I agree. She did. She got lucky as hell. I agree with that. She got lucky.
Typical reversal of mistake. Thanks, guys.
Who wins the shooting games in at Boeheim Court at the house? But I mean, after that, I can't touch it. I mean, like, can you still make a shot?
No, I gave. As soon as when they were 12, they started to beat me. I quit.
Right. Thank you, Coach.
Coach, appreciate it.
Bye.
Love that.
That's your guy. That's your man. He is so good. No filter whatsoever. Just tells it like it is.
Nobody watches more basketball than Jim Boeheim.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing in the world. When you go do a game, as you've done at Syracuse, and you visit him in his office, he'll either have a game on, he'll have an NBA game on, he'll have talk radio on. I went there one time. He had the Syracuse radio station on. All right. And they were complaining about his schedule. And I was already walking in, and Adrian Archer, my former assistant, goes, "Coach, he's fired up." He said, "Some guy's killing our schedule." And he's talking to the television about, like, how, like, I mean, I could hear him, like, this blankety blank has no clue. Blah, 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 blah. And I walk in and I go, "Coach, you have a gazillion wins. You're in the Hall of Fame. Why are you worrying about some, you know, 19-year-old on the university radio station?" And he just goes, "That blank pisses me off." It was awesome.
That's him, man. Every guy that's come through that you know from Syracuse has a Jim Boeheim story. And it's freaking awesome. I love that guy.
All right. So what's your take on Coach Boeheim and the idea that the kids really do want to play and we can do it in a safe environment?
Well, I think one of the things that we're going to see over the next few weeks is more definites. I think we're going to see where this virus is and where schools are with it. I think having money to spend for testing, like Coach said, is huge. I think schools that don't are really fighting. And let's be honest, Seth, you and I both coached in leagues where you got to make money for your team. I had 4 guaranteed games I had to go play to raise $200,000. And the truth of the matter is, I don't know where that money's going to come from now if we don't, you know, have some sort of non-conference season. Personally, for me, Seth, again, I'm not dealing with this on a daily basis, but let me ask you this. Major League Baseball has simply said, we're going to have cases. We're going to keep fighting through. I study this almost every day, and I really can't understand why we don't start a season normally and then move along from there. I could be wrong. I could be dead wrong. I could be the worst human being alive, but it seems to me that that's moving. It's moving a little more in that direction than anywhere else.
I think we're going to start at latest that Thanksgiving date. I think that's the date that we're going to start. I think that we're going to be up to, my gut feeling is you're going to be able to take the Disney model, the NBA model, whether it's at Disney, and take all those exempt tournaments and move them through Disney, because people are going to be in remote learning anyway, move them through Disney in over a 2-week period. And think about this, or maybe a 3-week period. You're going to be able to have pods in other areas where tournament type situations or round robins are going to be able to take place. Because let's face it, if you have distance learning, you can do that learning anywhere you're at. I mean, it's not like you have to be, you know, on campus or going to a game. You can also control the protocol. You can have a plan. It could be the healthiest environment. I just think that, and then I think league play is going to go to pods. I think they're going to go to 5-team pods where you can legitimately potentially play a number of games in one site. Your thing about the non-conference games is huge, though, because, I mean, like at Long Beach State, you know, we played 4 and 5 of them, and, you know, those would drive over to UCLA and make $90,000. I mean, that, you know, that covered a lot of bills for a lot of non-revenue sports. That was go to Arizona and play Arizona on Southwest Airlines, friends fly free. I mean, you know, we'd go up the night before the game, we'd play the game, and then we'd be out of there, you know, especially if it was a Saturday game. So I think there are going to be a lot of schools. They're going to have a real concern for how do they survive their budgets? How do their non-revenue sports survive when Stanford's dropping sports? I said this before. When Stanford is dropping sports, we have an issue, because it's one thing Stanford has, they got money.
Yeah, I think a lot of schools, this is what I've been told, a lot of schools are using this as an excuse to drop sports they were going to drop anyway. Now, I don't know if that's 100% right or wrong, but I've been told that a lot of different times by a lot of different people. So I don't know, Seth. Here's what I see. I see the world coming back. I see people, particularly, and I'm just keeping this to athletes right here, understanding. I think some of the people that made mistakes early have been good for later, meaning I think the two guys with the Cleveland Indians, Plesac and Clevinger, doing what they did and the backlash they faced from not only the media but from their own team, I think that's good moving forward for other people to see. I think the fact that you see baseball, and I use baseball because they're not in a bubble, baseball continuing to play is good for other teams, other things. I think the fact that you saw a college football game, and make no mistake, I talked to my director at ESPN, Scott Johnson, who is the best football director that there is, and he's like, hey, I'm doing games next week, 2 weeks, and on and on and on. So I think all of this bodes well for college basketball, very well for college basketball, assuming players take precautions. And in talking to NFL guys, the general manager of the Colts was very clear with me. He said, we're going to start the NFL, then it's up to the players. So I just think that this is a responsibility that players have. And if they live up to it, I think we'll see a basketball season that culminates in the NCAA tournament. I do.
Well, I agree. I keep on saying, I say the same thing. I'm getting redundant on it. This will test teams' cultures. This will test type of teammates guys have. Like if you have a good culture and you have good teammates, I think you'll be up to have the discipline needed to survive the bubble that you need to live in. If you don't, you know what? You're not going to. And that's just the way it is. And the coaches are talking to players about this every single day. And I know that it is absolutely difficult. I think it is what it is. I mean, I think, you know, you're going to see, and we're seeing. Now, I was surprised Iowa had a big uptick the other day, and they were forced to having to shut things down for a while. That will challenge your culture, because a bad decision by two or three guys can obviously infiltrate a whole team or a meeting room if it's football or a locker room if it's basketball. And guys are going to have to hold each other accountable. That's just the way it's going to be.
It is. It really is. And I like the fact that Coach Boeheim talked about the school holding people accountable. I think Purdue suspended or kicked out, I'm not sure, 44 kids. Indiana here announced, I think, 35 kids were on a temporary suspension, and they quarantined 12 different fraternities and sororities. I think the number is 12. So the truth of the matter is universities are taking this very seriously. It's not just, hey, you come to our school, we understand you're a kid and you're going to party. No, that's not what universities are doing. And good for them. And if they continue to do that, then we'll have sports. If they don't, then we won't. It's as simple as that. It really is. It's as simple as that. So.
All right, my friend. Well, we were supposed to have David Wingate. Something must have come up. I'm trying to email him as we speak. We'll
very slow.
I think that Coach Boeheim kind of gave us a great understanding of what Coach Thompson was all about. And he was an amazing man who impacted so many lives. And I think the coolest thing is when you hear a coach talk about another coach and talk about the significance that person had, not just for the players he coached, but other coaches, coaches within the league, players. And when he's talking about, you know, what Kenny, the Jet, and Shaq and Charles were talking about, they don't have to say those things, but they're speaking from the heart. And to me, that's really cool. And to me, that's cool. And like I said, my interactions with Coach, he was so kind and gracious to me. And I appreciate it. And I think the one thing Jim did say that I thought was pretty funny, when he became a radio personality and started doing games, down deep, Coach was a hard hour to shell. He was a caring, compassionate, fun guy.
He used to, every time, I only saw him four times, and for some reason he liked me, and he always used to drop about five F-bombs on me, and then we would talk for a few minutes. Judd Heathcote used to punch me in the stomach every time I saw him, and I don't really know why, but he did. So I'd get F-bombs.
And Judd used to send me Hair Club for Men, so don't feel bad. Unbelievable. Well, that is the world's greatest podcast, with the great Jim Boeheim as our guest, kind of revisiting the great career of both Lou Dolson and the great John Thompson.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.